I was born into a recently but truly converted home. My mom and dad had become Christians in their later teenage years. And they were truly converted. And I was raised in a fundamentalist Baptist church, which was both good in many respects, but also because the gospel, and we can talk about this in a minute, I think, I was taught was tainted by some error, it led to real struggles in my life. One of my keen, vivid memories of my childhood is knowing that every Sunday I'd misbehave and I'd get taken out and I'd get spanked. I don't remember what I was doing wrong. I'm sure my parents had a good reason, but I would get taken out and I would get spanked. I don't know how old I was when that stopped happening, but that's what would happen. Nor do I doubt if my parents loved me. The good thing about the church I was raised in is that the pastors, even though I think some of their theology was off, they did preach the Bible to us for 45 minutes in the morning and 45 minutes in the evening, unless we had a Billy Graham movie at night, which, of course, I don't approve of now. But I was born in a place called Alma, Michigan. I was raised in Stanton, Michigan, which if you know how Michiganders do it, they put their hand up and say, I was born right there, right in the middle of the mitten. And that's where Stanton is. And the Lord began to convince me of the truth of the gospel when I was 3 years old. I don't know if I was actually converted then, but my dad led me in a sinner's prayer after some evangelistic services. No one else liked the preacher because he preached fire and brimstone hell, but it affected a three-year-old boy who was there. I was baptized when I was seven, at least I have to put it in quotes, because later on I was baptized many years later when I became convinced that I probably wasn't a believer when I was 7 years old. Throughout my teen years until I went to college, I struggled very deeply with assurance of salvation. And didn't come to assurance of salvation until I was in my college years and came into Reformed theology and the doctrines of grace, and that taught me some things that led me to a prevailing assurance of salvation at that point, which I hadn't had for many years. The two things I learned was coming into the doctrines of grace. I learned that salvation was all of God, all of grace. And it wasn't something that I manipulated by praying the right sinner's prayer. And it wasn't something that depended on whether I said the right words in the sinner's prayer when I was a boy. And along with that, a knowledge that salvation was all of God, came the knowledge that where the free grace of God touches a sinner, it transforms his heart and his life. And so I learned the great confessional truth that it is effectual calling that's the mark of election, and that effectual calling is accompanied by the marks of grace in a person's life. And so I began to, at that point, that was just like brand new to me, dawned on me, and I realized, hey, you know, so if a person's a Christian, if he's chosen of God, these are the things that happen in his life. Oh, but those things are true of me. And the text that I remember most vividly is in 1 John 3, we know that we've passed out of death into life because we love the brethren. I knew that that text wasn't teaching that I saved myself by loving the brethren. I knew it was teaching that loving the brethren was a result of God's sovereign grace. But when I looked at my life, I said to myself, hey, who are my people? And at that point, I could say very clearly and definitively, my people are not the world. They're not the unconverted rascals I went to public high school with. And this reflects the fact that God has planted love for himself in my soul. In the space of 2 or 3 months, after learning those things and having doubted my salvation for years and years, God brought me to assurance of salvation. With regard to my getting baptized, I was actually a pastor and kept trying to stare back and determine whether my baptism at age 7 was valid or not. And I had to finally come to the place where I said, all things considered, I'm not sure it was. And I want to be sure that I was biblically baptized, so I was baptized when I was 26. And that was a short time after I became a pastor of the Reformed Baptist Church of Grand Rapids, actually. I met my wife at her brother's wedding. Her brother was Jim Hostetler. He was pastor of the Church of Grand Rapids for a long time, fell into sin, but came back and repented. But he was very influential in my life. He came to many years before that. He came to Grand Rapids Baptist College, where I was a student. He was actually booted out of Bob Jones University for Calvinism, and very unfairly so, I think, still. And we got to become friends. We were attending the same local church that was Calvinistic in its doctrine. And at the last moment, one of his good friends backed out of being in his wedding. So in the summer of, I think it was 1970, we drove in his Maverick from Grand Rapids, Michigan, down to the Panhandle of Texas, whether it's a week-long celebration of the wedding. And it was there that I met his sister for the first time, my wife Charlene now. And we spent the week talking about theology, and we were thrown together because we were like the only unmarried people in the wedding party. So we got to know each other that way. She was going to Grand Rapids Baptist College. And when we got back there in the fall, we dated a couple of times. We just kind of drifted apart. She was a missionary kid, and it was a really tough adjustment coming back to the States and basically being by herself there in an entirely new culture for her. She was raised in the Philippines and actually graduated from high school at Faith Academy there. So we drifted apart. We actually double dated with other people. I got my heart broken and also got my head fixed and my heart fixed with regard to what priorities ought to be and the kind of woman you're looking for. And I'm not saying I ever dated a non-Christian. I don't believe I did. But I got my head straightened out. And when I got my head straightened out, I thought about Char and the friendship we had had, and I called her up. It wasn't terribly encouraging at first because I was living with her grandparents. And I called her up where she lived in Grand Rapids. She's going to nursing school. And I said, "Hi, this is Sam." And her response was, "Sam who?" So that was terribly encouraging. But actually, I think about a year and a half later, we were married. We spent the whole week of the wedding down in Texas, her asking me probing questions about particular redemption. She was impressed because I didn't get mad at her. But I should have known from that experience that I was not marrying a pushover theologically. I would have my hands full for a long time. I like her more than I did 50 years ago. It'll be 50 years this summer. She is solid, Christian to the core, and though neither of us were very perfect. We were talking the other day and said to ourselves, boy, was there a lot we didn't know about each other and about ourselves when we first got married. But she had the commitment to the marriage covenant through thick and thin that you promise when you get married. And God gave me that as well. And so through a lot of trials and sorrows and things, God has brought us through. And he's preserved her, and frankly, we're happier with each other in terms of our relationship than we've ever been 50 years later. Most influential people in my life were my mom and dad. Not because of all they taught. I mean, they did teach me a lot, but it was more by way of example, just by being who and what they were and being faithful. Dad tried to have family worship, was he was a very young Christian when I was born and hadn't been raised in a Christian home at all and didn't have good teaching for that matter. He tried to have family worship, but what I do remember is that the Bible was a live issue in our home. We talked about the Bible, even if we didn't have regular family worship, you know. So that's something I remember. I remember they're just being faithful to each other and faithful to love me. And the longer I've lived and the more I've seen how messed up other people are by their parents, I'm just thankful for a set of parents that didn't mess me up the way I've seen so many people messed up by their wicked, unwise, foolish parents. Influential preachers. I have to say, first of all, Pastor Al Martin, his three-volume pastoral theology is getting, I think, a lot of attention. It deserves it. And his preaching is what was very influential in deepening my understanding of the doctrines of grace and of Reformed faith. Came to Michigan a couple of times, preached on repentance and the tree of repentance at one conference, and I remember preaching on the new creation at another conference. And his preaching was just really influential on me. I had the privilege at Trinity Ministerial Academy of sitting for six semesters through his entire pastoral theology course, and just was profoundly influenced by it. Still thankful for that experience. Another man that whose preaching influenced me and was Pastor Greg Nichols, who was his co-pastor for a period of time then, and then my co-pastor in Grand Rapids, the Reformed Baptist Church of Grand Rapids, for a number of years. And then my brother-in-law, who was the pastor of the church in Grand Rapids from, at the time we joined in 75 till 96 or so, to be a missionary. His preaching was very influential on me now. That's, some people wouldn't want to say that because he did fall seriously into sin and then God gave him repentance less later. And I'm thankful for that. But I can't deny all the good I was done when he was walking with the Lord and preaching the rich biblical messages he preached to us in Grand Rapids. Important books. Yeah, well, John Murray, Commentary on Romans. John Murray, Redemption Accomplished and Applied. John Murray, Principles of Conduct. And later on, Anthony Hookema's The Bible in the Future. And at the same time, Gerhardus Voss, Pauline Eschatology. Those are some of the major books. My life revolves around three things that I love. And one of them is my family. I have four children and, well, the 16th grandchild is on the way now. But we've been stuck at 15 for several years. 16th is coming. And we're thankful for that. Thankful that all of my children are walking with the Lord now. Even though that, like Amazing Grace says, it was through many dangers, toils, and snares that that happened. I'm thankful that that's true. So my family. But I'm so thankful for what God has done in Grace Reformed Baptist Church Owensboro. We've just seen God bless us and bless us and bless us. And when I, in a very difficult time in my life, came to the church back in 2013, I think Shar and I were like the 14th and 15th members, and we're thankful to say that at our last check-in in 2025 last month, we're 105 members, I think, now. And we're just so thankful for the way God has grown the church there and the wonderful spirit that there's in the church. And then I'm thankful for Covenant Baptist Theological Seminary. We have CovCon 2025, this week in Montgomery, Alabama at Morning View Baptist Church there. We've got someplace between, around 325 people coming, and we're going to be talking about the law of God. We're just thankful to have the testimony to the truth that the seminary is. God has kept us and blessed us in so many different ways, at the seminary. Thankful that we can have a conference on the law of God and that very much abused subject in our day. I was just writing a preface to one of my messages this morning and reflecting on the fact that a lot of people love the confession, except the chapter on the law of God and the doctrine of the Sabbath. That's why I'm so glad we're dedicating this conference to it. Our speakers, I get to preach twice. Dr. Tom Hicks is preaching twice on the subject, and then Joel's Beakey's going to be with us for three times as well.